Well, hi everybody, and we continue. We're on the ninth program. A couple of programs before this have been of a longer kind, 3 hours or 2 hours, and I think maybe I'll just be able to do 1 hour today. I just want to make a little segue here. We're on page 95, basically, and we're talking about the groups that are being formed, the seed groups. There's a lot, bigger section on all of this to be found in Discipleship in the New Age, volume one. Bear in mind, this is the segue because we already covered this. I'm just going to read it across. Bear in mind that the objective before these groups is to relate the hierarchy and that for which it stands to humanity. Of course, this is our big task, isn't it, as students of esotericism at this time. The hierarchy is not hardly suspected by so many. To bring into a close rapport the two centers whose energy must eventually be fused and blended into one whole. And pretty much that means the throat center of humanity and the heart center of hierarchy in a planetary sense. Perhaps you will grasp the underlying idea with greater clarity if you will remember the personal work which you should be endeavoring to do with yourself. Is it not, the effort to fuse and blend the personality and the soul? This is so often spoken of, it almost gets trite. What are we doing? Well, we're blending and fusing the soul and personality, but if to really understand it, it's a profound effort with lasting changes in our consciousness. So blending the personality and the soul, or the higher self and the lower selves, in other words, the vehicles of the personality. Every time you have the focus of consciousness in a certain area of vibration, you have, as it were, a self, or the emotional self, the mental self, the physical etheric self. Your concentration can be on any one of those, and it seems that you are limited to that area. It's a kind of self. To do this, you have to realize that the illumination of the mind is a vital and essential factor. Okay, and that's why in the Tibetan system we are taught the value of the mind and not only the mystical approach. In a way, in terms of the synthesizing planets, we're moving from Neptune to Uranus. There are therefore three points to consider: the soul, the illumined mind, and the personality. And to these three, you have to add a consecrated and awakened heart, full of love to all, vibrant with compassion and with understanding. Bear therefore in mind these four factors. Now, this is a big demand, isn't it? A consecrated and awakened heart, full of love to all, vibrant with compassion and with understanding. I have to enlarge this particular sentence. I think it should be very meaningful to all of us, and let's just say, not easy to achieve. Okay, so bear therefore these four factors in mind. So often we think we can make discipleship simply a mental pursuit, and especially given the wonderful mentally stimulating material that Master DK has offered. But it is not so. It cannot be simply a mental pursuit. So we have the dedicated, oriented man. That's the entire lower man, the personality. We have the overshadowing spiritual man, the soul, with which we begin to identify, and the energy of which we begin to draw into the lower mind, so we have the mind illumined in the light, the lower mind illumined in the higher light. And there it is, the illumined mind, the medium of relation, and that relation comes under Mercury and some of the fourth ray. We begin to understand how everything relates and fits together, and then the consecrated loving heart, through which these three are expressed. The expression of the three, the soul, has very much to do with the heart center, and so does the Buddhic plane eventually. So this is sort of the way the inner man and the outer man have to come together. And that takes us then to number 9, where we were leaving off before. Okay, the expression of the three. It's almost like the Buddhic plane, you know. I wonder if I have, let's just see here for just a second. So here, in a way, we are comparing the microcosm to a broader or macrocosmic picture, to a containing picture. This is the personality and individual correspondence. When you use the word individual, it oftentimes relates to the soul and not so much to the individual personal man. That's at least the way DK deals with it. This is the personality and individual correspondence. In a way, the monad, although it is the one, is manifesting as an individual. And it is individual because it is indivisible, essentially. That which is not capable of being divided. This is the personality and individual correspondence to the broader picture and the world factors and the wider undertakings with which humanity is at this time faced. You know, we would have the personality of humanity as a whole, the overshadowing soul of humanity, the illumined, potentially illumined mind of humanity, and the consecrated and loving heart of humanity. It's a little microcosm, the humanity as a whole. Well, let's just say it's kind of a macrocosm, actually. Humanity as a whole is a macrocosm compared to the individual as the microcosm. I wonder how often we think of our relation to humanity as a whole. Just as in the life of the individual man, a man is confronted with the opportunity to function as a disciple in training. That's what we are, basically, aren't we? With a view to initiation. So today, humanity is faced in the same way with a similar situation and possibilities. So we're just enlarging the picture, and we know we are all struggling to help humanity take that step, each contributing in his own little way, you know. The higher correspondence with which the hierarchy is occupied at this time, and of which the outline just given is an inadequate analogy, is as follows. Okay, so we're taking a step beyond humanity into hierarchy. The intellectual center, humanity receptive and ready and expectant. The spiritual center, the hierarchy, positive, deliberate, in other words, properly willful and well considered in terms of its, well considered in terms of its actions, and acting on purpose, and munificent, giving that which is of great value and giving generously, but in proportion, so it can be used. A great source of that which will lift and enhance humanity. Okay, ready and waiting to bestow that which is desired, reached for, and claimed. Notice the sequence there. First we desire, then we aspire, we reach for, and then we actually demand on the basis of our spiritual connection with the divine plan and our purpose to sacrifice and offer ourselves for the divine plan. And then we have to be equipped, of course, if we're going to do that, so we can demand. And then the new group of world servers, they are the more advanced members of the human family, sensitive to hierarchical inspiration and to human need and to spiritual unfoldment as a determining factor in world affairs. I think, you know, more or less, we can place ourselves as students, sincere students of esotericism in this third group. And then small groups, which correspond to the illumined minds of individuals, intuitional and acting as a cohesive element and a fusing factor between humanity and the hierarchy, and they are gathered out of the new group of world servers. So we might say that this is a more advanced division. So let's just say more advanced divisions of the new group of world servers. And all I have to do is get that correct. And we're... I like it when the color is correct. All right. So there we go. So this is the sort of the hierarchical correspondence. It's a little like what I just proposed. But it's kind of the macrocosm that contains the individual. So humanity is, you know, the throat center is ruled by, at first, the earth. It has a lot of third ray, but it's productive without necessarily being intelligent. Then Saturn, a great deal of intelligence, comes into the throat center. Then the seventh ray also enters the throat center at certain stages of development relating to Uranus and a higher type of mind. And there's all kinds of ways to relate to the throat center. We cannot dismiss Mercury, which is a planet of great intelligence and relates to speech, thought and speech. And we cannot really dismiss Venus, which rules Taurus, and Taurus being the astrological sign connected with the throat center, and Venus allowing the love and light to pour through the throat center. Of course, what DK gives us on page 517 of Esoteric Astrology basically is the Earth and Saturn, but there are other associations, and even Vulcan is connected in a certain way that he describes. Thyroids rather, and parathyroids, I think. Somewhere he gives a connection there, and Vulcan is a ruler of Taurus, of course. And Earth has a special relation to Taurus, and so its fittingness for the throat is, I think, correct. Okay, so basically what he just gave us, the higher correspondence with which the hierarchy is occupied at this time, and of which the outline just given is an inadequate analogy. Humanity, the throat center, hierarchy, the munificent outpouring spiritual center. It's kind of a great heart center. The new group of world service is associated with the Ajna center and with great sensitivity and helps to guide humanity in the right direction. It has that beam of light that humanity can follow. And these are the guides and mentors of an intermediary kind, inspired by the hierarchy and able to guide humanity from within humanity, and then these small illuminated groups that are intuitive. Okay, so these are illuminated groups which are intuitive. And they are gathered out of the New Group of World Service, and the Tibetan was attempting, as we know, to train this kind of groups, and maybe some other masters have C groups as well. And the particular work of these smaller groups, let's call them C groups, SGS, it should be SGPS, no, I know I had it. these C groups are specific areas of brighter illumination, which really are a fusing factor between humanity and hierarchy. The New Group of World Service is in general, and the specialized fusing, whereby the hierarchy's capabilities of a specific kind can be brought into humanity, these groups facilitate that process. You know, I think one can understand as one goes along, but then to make the synthesis of all Master DK has said. I remember him saying that, you know, I've captured a lot of Devic lives in the preparation of these books, and one day I'm going to have to arrange for their liberation. I'm going to have to see that they are freed from the form into which I have gathered them. An interesting thought. Let me now present you with another vital consideration. Looking back over your individual lives, you will be conscious that it was the points of crisis and cycles of tension which constituted for you the major opportunities and the moments of moving forward. Are we so, as we just ponder for a moment? Probably there are certain moments of a great bearing down of circumstances and of interior necessity and demand, which together allowed for a forward movement. Not always necessarily the easiest or most pleasant, but tense in the right way. Crisis, tension, emergence is the threefold sequence that we're referencing here, I think. Major opportunities. There are crises of opportunities. Opportunity, we're told in the beginning, and they precede the crisis of expression. Opportunity, expression. Of these opportunities, you either profited or, by neglecting them, you temporarily failed. The neglecting of opportunity is temporary failure. I think there is no such thing in this universe as permanent failure. I don't think anything is left outside the Maha Pralaya. It's all one being, you know. But let's just say neglect of opportunity is temporary failure. And maybe just pause just for a second here and just say, you know, what were opportunities seized? I'm remembering in my own life, you know, that something that was had totally changed the practical course of my life is when I was invited to join the headquarters of the Arcane School back in back in the year 1979 or 80, something of that nature. I went there in 1980. And it was a bolt out of the blue. You know, I still look at my horoscope and I say, okay, now how was that engineered? And it was a crisis of opportunity because one had to, in a way, leave everything behind and leave one's direction in life and how one had planned to make a living and what one was aspiring towards, although my highest aspiration was towards the Tibetans' work. And of course, in my own mind, to work at the Lucis Trust at that time was the acme of possibility for me. I guess, you know, and I seized that opportunity. And then that was followed by a slowly growing point of tension, which cumulatively, I think, could be called a crisis of expression. And I still feel like I'm within it. Anyway, you'll have your own as you think back on your life. I said, those of you who are thinking backwards, some of you are thinking forward, you know, if you're younger. Of these opportunities, you either profited or by neglecting them, you temporarily failed. This same critical factor, if I might call it so, acts also in the world of men and in groups and masses. We are being presented with a great opportunity now. Will there be delay? He somewhere talks about a delay of a possible 300 years, and elsewhere, apparently, of much more. Today, the point of tension for humanity is such a situation similar to that to be found in the individual life, in such a situation, similar to that to be found in the individual life can be noted. Now, remember, what is our, you know, this is still an essay from 1939, and it's quite, you know, dire. The war is about to begin. The hierarchy stands at a point of extreme and scientific tension. That word scientific cannot be casual. I guess everything is co-measured and exactly applied. The energy is exactly applied. Scientific because induced and directed with a knowledge of possible outcomes. Factual inner esoteric knowledge guides the relationship of the hierarchy to humanity and also to Shambhala. It's not a guessing game for them. Mostly they know what will be the effect of the applied energy, although there was one instance, as we know, that in the late 1942, they felt humanity would go down to defeat. So they actually thought that that would be the case. And their thoughts were revised when they saw how the Lords of Liberation responded to the human crisis. Anyway, scientific tension, a point of hierarchy stands, and I wonder how it stands now. I would say, in a way, very much the same, and I would say that the tension is gathering in preparation for the externalization and reappearance. You can, if you so choose, picture these two great groups as facing each other. So he actually gives us a visualization regarding hierarchy and humanity. The hierarchy is aware of the need, of the purpose, of the dual tension. I guess one way of looking at the dual tension is to think of it as related both to Shambhala and to humanity, but then there is humanity's point of tension and then the hierarchy's point of tension, and maybe the new group of world servers in the middle trying to bring these two major points of tension on rapport. So it's aware of the need, of the purpose of the dual tension, and desirous of bringing this tension to such a crisis of precipitation that the fusion of the two groups will be inevitable, whilst the other group, humanity, unaware generally of the implications of the situation, is suffering, bewildered, and full of fear. Well, let's see. You know, another way of looking at this here is to think of two groups being the new group of world servers and hierarchy, and a precipitation into the minds and hearts of the new group of world servers. in such a way that they can guide humanity. So in a way, three points of tension are existing. Okay, they're aware of that. Let's see, the hierarchy stands and also at a point of extreme scientific tension. And what have we? And here is the point of tension for humanity. He is talking about hierarchy and humanity, basically. Okay, so DK. Okay, I have always to be careful here. So let's just say DK is referencing both humanity and hierarchy. But his language is unusual here, so let's see if this can be clarified. You can picture, if you so choose, these two groups, great groups, as facing each other. The hierarchy is aware of the need of the purpose of the dual tension, okay? Humanity's and its tension, and desirous of bringing this tension into a crisis of precipitation, and the fusion of the two groups, let's call it humanity. Okay. All I have to do is the fusion of the two groups. Yes, here it is. Okay, so that's humanity and hierarchy. Will be inevitable. Now, this is gradually coming about and will be greatly facilitated by the externalization of the hierarchy and the reappearance of the Christ. Whilst the other group, humanity, okay, unaware generally of the implications of the situation, is suffering, bewildered, and full of fear. And this is really on the eve of the war. And I guess we can consider, you know, the new group of world servers as part of humanity, definitely, I think. And what they receive from hierarchy is more easily received than humanity can, and then the transformation to pass on what is received from hierarchy is undertaken by them, so humanity can assimilate what is given. So there are two great points of tension, and this other point of tension within humanity, and from another point of view within hierarchy, because all disciples are within that great circle of hierarchy, if not within the major position within the ashram. Between these two groups stand the new group of world servers, if I had only read a little farther, constituted today of two bodies of people. Okay. I had to reason my way through that without reading far enough to see that he basically said it. Okay. Here are the two groups of people. Those who are aware of the plan are subject to and sensitive to hierarchical impression and dedicated to the task of bringing about desired fusion or group at-one-ment. These are the consecrated servers of the world who are free from all taint of separativeness, full of love to all men and eager for the spread of understanding goodwill. They correspond to the consecrated loving heart mentioned above. So I would say this, at least initiates of the second degree and beyond. And then number two, because it sounds like quite a demand, doesn't it? When you look at this type of people described under number one, full of, you know, the heart must be very open. And of course, the heart center, solar plexus to heart, is one of the great developments which occurs in relation to the second initiation. Both the first and second have heart development and throat center development. So they consecrate to, they correspond to the consecrated loving heart along with, you know, the oriented personality and the illumined mind and the overshadowing spiritual man. Okay. Because they are sensitive to that. more sensitive, more sensitive. And then number two, a small minority who have emerged out of the new group of world service and who can in every country function in group formation if they choose and so bring about the fusion for which the new group of world service is working and for which the point of tension in humanity and in hierarchy predisposes and has prepared the hearts of men. All right, and this tends to be, let's just say, even, I seem to be erasing what I write, predisposes. So, more advanced than a group one. I'll read it again. A small minority who have emerged out of, let's just say, the rank and file of the new group of world service and who can in every country function in group formation if they so choose. Immediately we begin to think about, you know, DK culling these students out of the Arcane School and other places for welding into 10 C groups and later into a new and reorganized C group and so forth, in group formation if they choose, and so bring about the fusion for which the new group of world servers is working and for which the point of tension in humanity and in hierarchy predisposes and has prepared the hearts of men. So what do we have here? We have a very responsible task. Okay, their opportunity and responsibility is great because they know the plan, at least, you know, not the way the custodians of the plan can know the plan, you know, higher members of the hierarchy. But in terms of the human race, they know the plan. They are in touch with the guiding teachers on the inner side, those who were gathered around Master DK through the helpfulness of Alice Bailey were such, and are sensitive to the higher impression, and that was the case for many. They correspond to the points of illumination, and so to the illumined minds referred to above. Well, let's see. Are these in group one initiates of the second degree, at least initiates of the second degree, I'll just say, or approaching? And here, well, I have to say the same, although some might be initiates of the second degree, and some even of the third. There were a few in the Tibetan group, let's say Alice Bailey herself and Roberto Assagioli, let's say, who had taken the third initiation. So these are more advanced types. Are they occultists? They could be. Are they esotericists? Yes. Can you be aware of the plan if you're not an occultist or esotericist? I would say yes, in a way. Many people in the United Nations see developmental goals which are highly desirable and attainable for humanity. And you might say that as they attempt to fulfill these goals, they are aware of the plan. Now, not everybody is perfect in every demand here. That's pretty obvious. But at least something within the individual makes a membership in one or other of these two groups a possibility. So they correspond to the points of illumination referred to above, and I'm sure that's what Master DK hoped for those he was gathering and training in his various groups. Here is the picture of these esoteric interrelations, and here you can note the position which you could hold. For these groups have a definite opportunity to bring about this world fusion. The C groups can bring about world fusion. So let's see. I'm going to, as long as we're talking about C groups, I'm going to see if I can't. Yes, I think I succeeded there. A little break. Okay. Here is the picture of these esoteric interrelations. Now, obviously, people like ourselves are striving to be really productive members of the new group of world servers. Whether or not we have attained initiation of the second degree, I would say so many people that really stick with Master DK's teaching and try to develop the type of discipleship which he offers are initiates of the first degree. They've had the birth of the Christ in the heart, and so their next objective is the second, which can, you know, either take a long time, or in one peculiar reference it said it can occur in the next life or two. So the time equation is very much in our hands. So here's the picture of these esoteric interrelations. And here you can note the position which you could hold. So he gives us this incentive, you know. And certainly we do need incentive. The illuminating teacher, I think working under Taurus and Gemini, gives a kind of divine incentive to the student. Well, these groups have a definite opportunity to bring about this world fusion that the new group of world servers seeks, but they can do so in a more particular way using certain chakras and certain rays. Have a definite opportunity to bring about this world fusion. So let's call it in particular ways, re-rays and centers and areas of service. And so precipitate the crisis of love to which I have so often referred. That's an amazing idea. And, you know, the crisis of love, one can only imagine what that will be when the Christ returns and is visible to so many who know who he is, carrying primarily this great love energy, though backed by the triangle around him, you know, with will and illumination and so forth. So, we, people like ourselves, could hold a position to bring about the fusion between hierarchy and humanity. And since it is the hierarchy of love, we would be contributing to the precipitation of the crisis of love. And if any of us think that it won't be a crisis, it will be a very big crisis. If love enters into our life, love in the hierarchical sense, so many changes and transformations and readjustments will be necessary. So, this is our opportunity. I'm going to just put that in here. This. What happened here? Well, there are always little things the computer does that may suddenly throw you. But anyway, this is our great opportunity to take a certain position in the fusion of hierarchy and humanity. Now, let's think about that for a minute. This is what's happening, and the new group of world servers are the conduits who are standing consciously or unconsciously upon the periphery of hierarchy. See, here is a, that's the one, isn't it? Look at this blue circle. And notice here how on the very bottom, And within the blue circle are people on the probationary path, various grades of disciples, and four grades of initiates. Not yet masters of the wisdom, okay, but they are within this blue circle of hierarchy. And there's another chart somewhere here that has a red circle that sort of includes Shambhala as well. So, let's see if I can get back to where I need to be. Okay, the great approach on the side of humanity is now going on with the tension induced thereby growing momentarily. Well, this is on the 1939, the growth of tension. This will increase with growing speed and tension until 1942. So, you know what's really interesting here? Let's just say this, that during the war, there was a great approach through the extreme tension of the war, I would say. So anyway, the great approach upon the side of humanity is now going on with the tension induced thereby growing momentarily, just about to grow, because this is 1939, just as the war is about to break out. This will increase with growing speed and tension until 1942, when either the first stage of fusion will have been made upon Earth, resulting in widespread goodwill and world understanding, or in postponement. This is interesting. Now, 1942 is exactly the year when the hierarchy felt humanity might go down to defeat. As a matter of fact, they expected it. They expected that this would be the case. And then came this surprise response from within the courts of Shambhala. So this will increase with growing speed and tension until 1942, when either the first stage of fusion will have been made upon Earth, and not that we would necessarily see it, but probably it did occur because the war turned. And there was such a demand by humanity, even if an inchoate demand, a fairly formless demand for a better, lighter way, that the Lords of Liberation responded. And let's just say that underneath it all, goodwill and world understanding were growing, or in postponement, and this is actually what the hierarchy expected would happen when the winter of 1942 came, with sad results to the human family and an inevitable break in the tension, which will take a form that will cause much real suffering and widespread disaster. So interesting to see how they think. You know, now we know what happened, you know, so we're in that privileged position of knowing what actually did occur. And here he is predicting that either there will be the increase of goodwill and love, which there probably was, but in a latent manner, because the war was so incredibly intense, with this decisive point of, you might call it, Stalingrad. And that was where the turn, I think, was made. And I saw some films of the German army and the people back in Germany gathering as news was coming in about Stalingrad. And although I think much was withheld from them, there was a general depression to be sensed, because they knew there had been no victory, and within them something knew that the war had turned inevitably against them and that they would be defeated. Of course, the defeat came 2.5 years later, working out onto the outer plane. So here is where DK, from the position in 1939, predicts an inevitable break in the tension between hierarchy and humanity, because a Nazi takeover would have meant a shattering of that kind of relationship in the case of so many individuals. It would not have allowed it. And it will take a form that will cause much real suffering and widespread disaster. This disaster can take many forms, but upon them we will not speculate except to realize the urgency and the need for immediate action, which is demanded at this time. So we're left in the dark as to what might have occurred, but then DK has talked about that delay of 300 years. I wonder if I can find that. It might not be so easy to find because, you know, the exact words have to be there. Okay. Somewhere there is this, let's see. Well, I'm in a position where the Alice Bailey books won't come up for me at the moment. But okay, we'll just go on and I'll come back to it if I can possibly find what I'm looking for. Now, there are two points to remember in connection with these seed groups. And these are in line with, but also expansions of, analogous conditions in the seeds, which fructified after implantation and development in animal man, produced the living, self-conscious individual. These are the seeds from the solar angel, we might say. Okay, from the solar angels, in their totality, and in their totality, the fourth kingdom of nature. So the entirety of the solar angel rested in its dwelling place within the cosmic ethers, but then sent forth some stream of energy which operated as a seed in the energy system of animal man, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself. I remain. It applies to the solar angels. So the two points. The first point has reference to the quality of the implanted seed, and the second to the method of implantation. Now there are several different methods by which the solar angels stimulated the kind of animal man of the period, and it was pretty much the higher developed animal man that received the implantation. Some of those far behind in their development only received a kind of stimulation, but not an implantation. The quality of the seed of the sons of God was effectual in producing the human family, which was effectual, was intellectual, and the self-conscious, self-directed man was the result. And let's just say 21 years ago. Okay, so that's 21 million years ago. And that's when the arrows shot forth from the bow, as they say, and it was a Sagittarian type of influence which was operative, although not until the Leonian period did man really awaken to what had happened, and it was really some 3 million years later, which is astonishing, but it coincided with the time that Sanat Kumara and other Kumaras focused on the earth, focused Shambhala on the earth. The fruit of this quality, remember that the soul is the quality of life. We want to remember that. Okay. The fruit of this quality. Right. Okay, so, excuse me just for a second here. The soul is the quality of life. Plus, the livingness of the seed itself can be seen today in the more advanced and cultured thinking people, and in those who are in any sense of the word personalities. There were different times when individualization occurred, obviously on the moon chain in its own way and in the previous solar system, but on our planet, a Lemurian implantation and also an Atlantean stimulation much later, and these people are relatively behind in their development. And then for some, no implantation whatsoever, but simply a fanning of the mental unit so that individualization could occur. So the fruit of this quality, plus the livingness of the seed itself, can be seen today in the more advanced and cultured thinking people and in those who are in any sense of the word personalities. So they have developed the fifth petal is in process, or later petals. Because to be a real personality, there must be at least a stirring and development within the fifth petal of the egoic lotus. Okay, now the method employed was the gift of mind to the more advanced among the animal men in a majority of cases, the stimulation of the instinctual faculty in others, whilst a third method was the leaving of a minority to the ordinary course of evolution. And I think in some of the less developed human beings of the present moment, we see the result of that leaving to the ordinary course of evolution. Still, the presence of evolution of the solar angels was, I think, even felt. The fanning of the mental unit came into expression. So the method employed, Blavatsky calls this sort of the hothouse method, you know, that refers to many human beings as hothouse plants. A special environment for their development was created through the implantation of the spark of mind. The method employed was the gift of mind to the more advanced among the animal men in a majority of cases. The stimulation of the intellectual faculty with others, maybe that is the fanning of the flame, the fanning of the mental unit, which had slowly taken form over years of evolution, even as animal man, whilst the third method was leaving of a minority to the ordinary course. Okay, so that's interesting. I used to think there were two methods primarily, but this leaving to the ordinary course of evolution, I think we see the results, and the opportunity will come in the fifth round for these types of human beings. These latter today constitute the least developed and most backward of the races of the earth. They are, in fact, a very small number indeed, and that's interesting. Maybe, you know, we find these people in the Aboriginal groups, and I don't only mean Australia, you know. There are other people who have kind of an Aboriginal developmental process at the moment, but their opportunity will come, DK tells us, in Cosmic Fire and especially in the fifth round. Now, in connection with the seed groups, which are fusing and blending in humanity at this time, and which in their totality constitute the nucleus of the fifth kingdom, that's really important. The distinguishing quality is the ability to respond intuitionally to higher impression and to present the mind with which humanity was endowed in the earlier process to the light of the intuition and hence to illumination. So this is a very important idea about what the seed groups can do. and what the members of the C groups are expected to do. So the distinguishing quality is the ability to respond intuitionally. They are the nucleus of the fifth kingdom. So these are the people that are moving into the kingdom of souls. And we know that that is the frontier at this time. Moving into the kingdom of souls, responding with the intuition of the soul and maybe beyond, maybe the Buddhic intuition, to higher impression and to present the mind. The mind will be held steady in the light, to present the mind with which humanity was endowed in the earlier process, a Venusian process, back in the Marian days, to the light of the intuition and hence to illumination. So we have intuition, illumination, and mind. This intuition is a blend of the two divine qualities of Buddhimanas, and that is the frontier for the more advanced humanity at this time. Or intuitive spiritual understanding. That is the way involving interpretation and identification, and the abstract mind, which is essentially the power to comprehend that which is not concrete or tangible, but which is in reality an innate recognition of the lower aspects of the divine plan as it must affect life in the three worlds. This is a marvelous definition of the abstract mind. You know, so often we go looking for what it really is, and here we have a very good example. So let's look at this one more time as we get ready, I think, to say that this little section, this program, is going to be over. This intuition is a blend of two divine qualities of Buddhimanas. Now, this is the frontier for highly developed human beings. Maybe, you know, later spiritual will enter into the picture, and among some disciples it must. Or intuitive spiritual understanding. Now, this is how this whole thing is described, involving interpretation and identification, and the higher so intuitive spiritual understanding, that's Buddhi, and the higher abstract mind, and here's the definition, which is essentially the power to comprehend that which is not concrete or tangible, but which is in reality an innate recognition of the lower aspects of the divine plan as it must affect life in the three worlds. And I'll make this bigger. I think that's just such a excellent way of understanding the abstract mind. You know how it is that we all go looking for definitions of the abstract mind, and here we see that the lower aspects of the divine plan can be understood through the abstract mind. And of course, let's just say concrete thought forms exist, but we can generalize. It's the power of illuminative generalization, I think. And we can look in at whole categories of concretions and understand the categories as divorced from specific examples. All right, that's really worth pondering, because interpretation, Mercury is involved, identification is involved, Venus is involved. So this intuitive spiritual understanding, that's very much the connection with Buddhi, and this idea of being able to be the same as the object. Subject-object unification, and then comes the abstract mind, which is not so much subject-object unification as it is the understanding of things in abstraction. X can stand for a whole category of concretions, and various formulas are worked out in the abstract mind, which will have concrete application. if they are correct. Okay, now let's see where we are. Okay. Right, let's go back here. Humanity, being still primarily self-conscious and self-centered, regards this plan as the divine plan for man, but as the seed groups grow and develop, the narrowness of this partial view will become increasingly apparent. Okay, well, there's a lot to look at here, and I think the best thing to do would be to call this program to a close. I think we went up to page 98, and the end of program number 9, basically. So I'll take this down to the place where we ended this very interesting sort of definition of Buddhimanas, and we'll say that this is the end of program number 9, and it's a sort of a 95 to, whoops, my computer is jumpy today. Okay, program 9, externalization, page 95 to 98, and this is the 31st of January, and we'll begin program number 10, and it'll probably be in February somewhere, page 98 to whatever, and the date will be XX, let's say, February, which starts tomorrow. Okay, friends. Well, all right, we have to make our way through all of this in a manner that is coherent, and sometimes it's not easy to be coherent when we are subjecting the material to fairly intensive analysis. So we're doing our best under the circumstances, and review it, you know, stop the video when you want to think about something. And we're just kind of looking at the origin of the seed groups and how it is analogous to planting the seed of mind in animal man. And what I'm understanding, maybe for the first time as I look at this, is that there's the method of implantation in individual in the days of individualization, the method of intellectual stimulation, and there's also doing nothing at all, you know, just leaving certain less developed animal men of the period to the ordinary course of evolution, whatever that may be. So were they individualized at that time? Did the presence even of the solar angels and that kind of stimulation give them the beginning of individualization, or did they have to grow their way into it without any stimulation from the solar angels? There are those people now who do not have the implanted energy stream from the solar angel. Okay, that is an esoteric fact. Okay, friends, that's it now. Thank you, and we'll be proceeding in our study. Okay, all the best, and lots of love, many blessings. See you then. Bye.